Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone. It's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Hi everyone, Ben here. I'd just like to take a moment to thank some of our patrons. James Gibson, Samantha Emery, Elizabeth, Erin Butler, Dominic Zeal, Paul Browning, Letizia Yema, Sarah Mannering, Corey Newman, Tyler Reisinger, aka Silphius, Deirdre, S.J. Patterson, Kay Hoddy, Danielle Boucher, Jen Moore, Paul Courtney, Tyler Shields, Jen Roth, Kathy Sandifer, Jeffrey Lisansky. Thank you all. We really appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them, go to www.patreon.com/rustyquill and take a look at our rewards.
Hello and welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and normally GM, Alex Newell, and with me today I have...
James Ross.
Bryn Monroe.
Ben Meredith.
And welcome back to everyone. If this is the first episode you're listening to, why? Why did you start in the second half of a season one catch-up?
Yeah, this is definitely part two
this,
of two.
Surely this is start literally the worst place to start.
Like, we set
What's
this up
wrong
for
with
you.
You.
We set this up for you.
It's so easy.
Start in the first half of the
you
season
are
one
so
catch-up.
So disappointing.
Rein it in.
You're almost as disappointing.
If I could find you, I bet we wouldn't get on.
So. Anyway, picking up from where we left off on our season one catch up.
To Dover, because we're finally leaving London. We're heading to Paris to follow up on the François Henri clue.
And again, a piece of world building reasons you were going to Dover. There were multiple ways to get to Paris. Expensive airships. Of course, you could have taken a ship over the sea. Or the channel tunnel exists in this, because when you have earth elementals to dig your tunnels, things get easier. Yep. However, because you have earth elementals to dig, there was no reason not to have done that from Dover as well. So they were both there, hence why you were heading to Dover.
Yeah, so we get there, and it's raining quite a lot.
Like
so
a lot.
We do what any good adventurers do and go to a restaurant called the Soggy Admiral.
Ah, yes. A little higher than the soggy captain, but...
And not as bad as a soggy cabin boy, which is just a wet boy who offers you a prawn in the street.
He just holds it out forlornly.
Yeah, it's in his coat. Yeah, and we have a bit of a fight. Well, we don't have a fight. Bertie defuses a fight by being very intimidating with some merchants who are very annoyed.
Oh, yes, that was in the restaurant.
Because it turns out that a bit of friction with the cult of Poseidon.
Yeah, it's not very good. Basically, there's some loads of storms, and they think the Poseidon cult should sort it out, and they're not.
Correct.
So, at this point, we head down to where we've been told there's a bit of trouble, which is a riot.
Yeah.
Or a protest, really, at that point.
And the protest is about to turn into a riot when Bertie single-handedly takes
riot.
It over.
Yep.
And basically just tells everyone to sit down and shut up. And they do.
Yeah.
Well, even more impressively, it had turned into a riot. Stones were being thrown, people were fighting. And he just shouted at people and they went... I guess we probably should sit down.
Yeah,
I was doing a fight, but...
It was pretty amazing.
It was a lesson in how the world shouldn't work.
Yes.
He who shouts loudest is in control of everything.
Yep.
So that successfully diffused. We get invited to stay at the Admiralty.
Yes, Commander Barnes. I believe you learn his name a little bit later.
Yeah, we do that. We have a lovely evening. It's full of booze. Barnes has a very interesting sword, which is also made of Damascan adamantine, I think.
Although old Damascan adamantine, so it is all elaborate. And Bertie briefly discusses the nuances
of borrowing it
on an extended period. It doesn't go too well. Yep. And it becomes readily apparent that Barnes has a bit of an issue with pretty much Bertie and Hamid as...
He don't like posh people.
Pretty much, pretty much.
So, we have actually quite a nice meal, and Zulf says a little too much about his history.
Yes.
Because we stay the night, and I think in the morning, I'm under house arrest, because he's done a little bit of digging and found out that I am AWOL.
Correct.
Missing, presumed dead.
Correct.
But never actually went back to the Navy.
And he transfers you to the local jail and the most wonderful jailer ever to exist.
He's lovely.
And we discover Zolf's fondness for...
He ignites a passion for romantic novels.
Yes.
Yeah, he does.
Proper Mills and Boone trash.
Yeah.
And I think Zolf's enjoying his time there.
Yeah, it actually is. It's quite nice.
Meanwhile, the rest of the party engage in
a single female lawyer. Yeah.
We form a crack legal team and formulate a strategy to win Zolf's case and get him off.
As he's up on a court-martial, I believe. During the part of that, during your investigation, you spend a bit more time with Barnes, and Hamid manages, with the help of the rest of everyone, to research a bit more about the case involving Zolf's ship and the situation where he went AWOL, didn't you?
Yeah, so basically you find out that his ship was attacked, destroyed? It's not very clear. But something happened to it and it fell apart, which is bad. Everyone ended up in the sea, also bad. And there were only two survivors? Well, three.
Three, but, including Zolf.
Yeah, including Zolf. There was the captain, who took early retirement and refuses to talk about it. And one other person who also refuses to talk about it. So it's shrouded in mystery, really. Nobody really knows what happened.
I remember it being very mysterious, and we never really found out exactly.
Or did we? Later, there might be a thing that did it.
So, you then managed to go do your court-martial trial, basically?
Yeah.
Oh, and the stakes were I would be deported to Australia.
Yes.
So be a bit of a spanner in the works.
Yes.
It would make the world tour easier in some ways.
Getting a direct
route. But mostly not.
Yeah. But yeah, it goes really well, I think.
Yeah, you slam it on the single female lawyer side with one of the most heartfelt speeches, montages.
It was incredible. It was a feat of both writing and acting that lives on in memory. But the audio equipment wasn't working that day, so we only caught like the final sentence.
Definitely that.
So, I mean, that's a bit disappointing to all of us. But I think we should let that speech live on in our memories forever.
It's disappointing to posterity more than any individual, really, isn't it?
So, ultimately, after the impassioned defence of his left hook, I'm just given a nice ordinary court-martial.
And have to buy yourself out from the military.
Which is, I think, 2,000 gold.
Yes.
Which we can just about...
We scrape together between us.
Scrape together.
Much to Bertie's chagrin.
Oh, yes, because he offered us an interest-free loan.
I know! That was, sorry, it's outraged both in and out of character. it's just poor financial planning.
But before you manage to finish your court-martial, whilst Zolf is in the prison, you are visited by...
The High Priest of Poseidon in Dover, who is a big, loud, horrible man, who demands that I be set free, even despite the fact that it was a military matter, and they refuse.
And the entire town is up in arms about the point Cult of Poseidon anyway.
Not a good PR guy,
not
ultimately.
A great PR guy, no.
But yeah, he storms in, scares everyone, and storms off again, and makes sure, tells me that I have to come and see him as soon as I'm out, basically.
Indeed.
So once we've dealt with the legal matters, we head on down to the Shrine of Poseidon, which is carved into the very cliffs of Dover, and is a giant screaming face.
Well, we decided that the closest replica we could say is if you ever look at a photo of James Ross, the guy who plays Bertie, his screaming face is sort of, you know, the face of Poseidon manfully stood on the side of Dover with his trident. Yep.
Chalk cliffs, tea towels, it's everywhere.
And you head into that chapter of the Cult of Poseidon's headquarters.
Yep.
Quite literally through the mouth of Poseidon.
And while three of us stand at the top committing microaggressions towards a merman.
Indeed. Well, he was an Aquan.
I think that was mainly...
Oh, they keep going.
See, you just don't stop, do you? Yeah.
But I think that was Bertie and he was doing macroaggressions. There's nothing subtle about it. It was kind of, you've got gills, nya, 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 nya.
I think there's at least 10 minutes of that episode which is just fish-based puns.
They are.
If you like that sort of...
Fish baiting, I think, is the...
if you like that sort of thing.
And Zolf is brought up before a council of his superiors.
Yeah, and told off, basically. Because during the basement at Q, he'd lost his powers.
Yes.
Which is a shame. That's what happens when gods give you powers. They can take them away again. And it's basically told that you don't just have to try and drown people. Which was news to Zolf, because he thought that was... But apparently you've got to do this whole helping thing, which is a bit
sacrifice
weird.
Sacrifice comes in many forms, is what I believe you were told.
Which is a bit odd, because that sounds like more of Apollo's deal. Poseidon's a bit more...
Drown them! Drown them all!
Just balance, you know?
Oh, come on. Apollo's less about sacrifice and more
is
about...
Is it because I was...
Hello! Everything's great! Hi!
Is it because I was drowning humans and not horses?
Well, we'll have to investigate that, eh?
Yeah, fair enough. But in order to curry favour again with, well, the chapter and the gods...
They knew we were going to Paris.
Yes.
And they decided that the best way for us to get there...
was effectively going across an extremely stormy English Channel on a coracle.
And also asked you to keep an ear out for any other stories of extended storms and other such unusual weather, as they've been having reports around the globe, and they really, really need to know what's going on, because as far as they're concerned, it shouldn't be happening.
Yeah,
I totally forgot that.
Yeah.
We haven't been near the sea since.
And it's worth pointing out the only reason the town were annoyed at the cult of Poseidon is because they had previously dealt with storms and made them go away. And suddenly, every time the weather's bad, everyone's like, yo, Poseidon guys, fix this for us. It was a bad day.
Yeah. Anyway, so Zolf says, oh, he's going to do that, and the party can do whatever they want. Both Hamid and Sasha...
Yeah, hats off to both of you, actually. Sasha especially, well, no, hats off to all she was terrified.
Yeah, but also hats off to everyone, because Bertie took one look at a small rowboat when I'm wearing plate armour. That's a really bad idea.
Bertie is an idiot, but he's not an idiot. Yeah. So He got the train.
We also made a wager. The first one to get to, I think it was Gare du Nord in Paris. Oh, no, it was first to get to Calais. Yes,
first to Calais.
First to Calais.
Yeah.
First to Calais. Wins 200 gold.
Yes.
So Bertie storms off perfectly happy because he's got the opportunity of winning money and a nice train journey.
Yep.
And we set off in our little
and then we
boat.
Split the party, because that's always a good idea.
So we spend the next three episodes with two halves of the party or something like that, which must have been a nightmare for the GM.
It's fine. Once you can just delay one character indefinitely and unfairly for taking the train, it gets much easier.
Yes, so I think it's probably useful to just do each part in turn without jumping between the both of them. And a lot happens, so
like
if we just skim.
Those of us on the boat.
It all goes well and then really badly. Everyone nearly drowns. Mm. Hamid gets stuck in the boat upside down. Both Sasha and Zolf are free swimming and really struggling.
Yep. I believe there's a period where Zolf chucks basically all of his equipment into the sea.
Basically tells Poseidon to go away and take him, not Sasha, because it's his fault.
Hey, it lasted long enough for you to be in the eye of the storm.
Yeah, did. We were in the eye of the storm, got everyone back in the boat and managed to sort of make our way out, just about. Yeah. The other interesting thing we saw was a giant metal tentacle which came through. And this is why I say maybe that's what sunk Zolf's ship, or maybe something like it. Who knows? We actually don't. But yeah, assumedly, big squid robot might be this world's Nautilus. Just riffing here because I've got no idea.
It was very mysterious. We only caught a glimpse of it,
very
basically.
Big. But yes, we washed up on the beach quite a way south of Calais.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I find my trident in a bush.
Yep.
So that's handy.
And then we met two eccentric...
English women,
having a car race around northern France.
Yeah.
And we managed to persuade them to give us a lift to Calais.
Yeah. It was exciting and very dangerous. Meanwhile, what was Bertie up to?
Bertie gets the train. Bertie is impeded by bureaucracy. Bertie bribes bureaucracy.
Let's dig in a little deeper.
Okay.
Bertie rocks up to the tunnel. The tunnel's not even running because it's flooded. At which point, Bertie finds the person in charge and goes, is it 5 gold flooded or 50 gold flooded? A discussion ensues. Turns out the person's terrible at maths. You get them to open the station on the electric-powered train, which is awash with water.
And as every school child knows, mixing water and electricity never goes wrong.
Exactly. So after we've got the train moving, you carry on down the tunnel, and then the train stops.
Yep.
Basically, it stops. And you encounter Doom Driver, because everything's doomed, and they're doomed, and they shouldn't be there because they're doomed.
That was another excellent NPC who should definitely form part of a spin-off.
So Bertie, in his wisdom, basically forces the guy to teach him how to rewire the train, rewires it through the middle of the train, all of the electricity from the elemental at the front, briefly considering releasing the elemental, but deciding against it. Maybe not now. And then just forces everyone off the train and begins marching towards Calais on foot, mm-hmm. accompanied by the author of all of the stories that Zolf is such a fan of.
Oh, is it?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you actually pay attention to the names.
I completely not picked up on that.
Bertie has met the author of all of the novels that Zolf's mad for.
And almost killed him by accident.
Almost killed him.
No, by accident on purpose.
Yeah.
Brutor, of course. Yep. Brutor's there perpetually now. The NPC that never should have been is now a core character.
Well, Bertie's got that level of handle animal. Like, I've got to handle an animal at some point. Like, what's the point? I mean, well done. You've successfully stroked the chin of a cat. Like, oh, brilliant. That's okay.
So also, he's definitely going to sell them as t-shirts, so you should be thankful.
Yeah.
So you continue on until you find the flooded tunnel. Try and take a diversion down some service tunnels, which waste an enormous amount of time. Yep. You finally manage to make yourself out at the other end, and there is a brief disturbance at the station of Calais as what can only be described as a sea creature that looks like Bertie and a little smaller sea creature that looks like Brutor arise from the depths extremely angry.
They've never seen anyone dirty in France, so it's a bit of a shock for them.
Eventually, you manage to clear up the fact that you're human, and through an enormous amount of intimidation, manage to finally, after hours and hours and hours, convince customs to let you out of the station. Yeah. And then from there, jumping back to Hamid and Co. on your madcap drive towards Paris.
So me and Sasha are in one car and Hamid's in the other. Our car just totals itself and then explodes. No one is killed, amazingly. So we have to hitchhike.
Yep, but Hamid manages to make it at least.
Hamid wins the race, but basically lets Bertie go ahead of him.
Well, this is the thing. Bertie turns into France's angriest man who kidnaps somebody and direct them towards the hotel.
Yep.
And everyone's laughing at him in Paris.
Yeah, for some reason. So, Hamid, you're furious.
Yep.
Hamid just beats him and then really, really, like, considerately allows...
diffuses the situation so that Bertie doesn't explode.
Bertie would have definitely done a murder.
Yeah.
And so you enter, I believe the hotel was
Se.
It was very, very, very now and quite pretentious.
So, three episodes later, the party is finally no longer split.
Yep. Correct.
And Zolf owes Bertie 200 gold.
Yep.
So, I believe from Say, having reconvened and caught up and just had a moment to breathe, you moved on to Paris.
Yes, we take a nice, simple train. So,
train journeys, when we're all together, really, really,
really
uneventful.
Simple.
They just go,
really
well,
all right.
Great. Yes.
What happens if you have a state-run railway system? Just saying, carry on.
That is word for word what you say at this point.
Is it really?
Word for word.
Don't criticise me for holding consistently to my principles.
I sound
like the right of the Labour Party.
I think I might actually slam cut to your exact intonation of that joke and back again. So, you managed to make it to Paris. Incredibly metropolitan and advanced and significant.
And there's a clockwork man waiting at the station.
Oh yeah, just ticking along being spooky.
With a sign saying, Sasha Rackets.
Yeah.
And he basically leads all of you. And you decide to go with it. Against Sasha's wishes, immensely again, by the way, I'll point out. You are led towards the premier establishment of Paris.
The premier inn.
La Triomphe. A hotel which is world-class and a stone's throw from L'Arc d'Ordinateur, in our world, obviously, the Arc de Triomphe. And as such, you head into the hotel.
We are gifted the presidential suite.
Yeah.
Well, no, Sasha isn't gifted. Sasha owns the presidential suite, apparently.
It has been bought in perpetuity in Sasha's name, which freaks her out even more.
And so I think we spend two episodes eating huge lobsters.
No, you're skipping ahead because I believe there's a period where you decide what you really need is to have a good talk and find out that there is a room which is free from all observation.
The exposition box.
And mundane, as is now referred to colloquially as the exposition box. And then have a bit of a heart-to-heart.
I'm pretty sure we ate the lobsters before we went into the exposition box.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We've got our priorities
lobsters,
right.
Lobsters, then exposition box, then more lobsters.
Yep.
And in the exposition box, I believe Bertie decides to have a bit of a share.
Yeah, Bertie splurges and tells everybody all about the contract and how if he is unheroic, etc., etc., then he will be erased from history and confined to a dim, distant dimension, etc. So he's off hunting for glory, etc. And that is why he is there and what he is doing.
And the second that he vacates that room...
No! I've got a burning tattoo! Oh, no, this was ill-advised! Yeah, and correct. It's sort of a three strikes and you're out thing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, because as you return
as in,
to the suite
of
upstairs...
this plane of existence!
Yep.
You are immediately visited by Harkness, Harkness, Darkness and Sphinx.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least their representatives.
Just two of them.
Just two of them.
Yeah.
And they make a point of spelling out that, yes,
you all gnomish lawyers.
You breach the terms of your contract by letting people know, and you're going, oh no, will this mean they're punished? At which point the lawyers say, no, you're punished. That's how contract law works. So, therefore, you are now on your strike, and you have two more strikes, effectively, mm-hmm. and probably shouldn't be telling people about this contract.
Yep. So after that, we decided to start doing some investigation about this Francois Henri Trapp chap.
Although I'll mention, just from a personal standpoint, Sasha has a lovely moment sat on the roof with all of the gargoyles who act as security for the hotel and ends mm-hmm. up just getting to know a bunch of gargoyles. I just quite like that as a little point that ended up happening. But yeah, you head towards La Triomphe.
We do, and in order to try and get some information, we... organise a tour.
Yes.
And Hamid also gets a date.
Yeah, he does.
With the person working the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
And on this tour, Sasha sneaks away from the party and yes. actually manages to make it all the way to Francois Henri's office.
Yes.
While we just continue our tour.
Yes.
And then something strange happens because she gets in, has a bit of a chat to Francois Henri.
And then you all meet up outside.
Yeah, fade to black. And she says they had a lovely chat, but not about anything very specific.
Or how long, or why, or where.
And her memory has been played with.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're all very confused about that.
Indeed.
But I think from the person working at the front desk...
Yes.
So we find out a bit more.
Yes. Yeah.
Find out about Amelie Rose, I think.
Yes.
That she was also asking the same questions.
An investigative reporter.
For...
La Gazette Grande.
La Gazette Grande,
the
that's
massive
it.
Newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one
which,
broad sheet.
Which, again, canonically has been decided to just be, literally, it's a massive, yep. massive broadsheet is how they publish.
So we go to their offices.
And meet your most deadly foe.
Which is an old fat man
yep.
who drops bottles on us.
Yeah.
He dropped sacks of something on us, didn't he?
Well,
bottles and sacks.
A variety of things.
He drops
bottles. You pursue him onto the rooftops. He begins to escape. You try and pursue him. He drops something, demolishing the rickety roof he was stood on, taking out Sasha, at which point I believe you might want to describe this bit particularly.
Bertie's
darkest
moment.
Bertie, yeah. Look, all I'm saying is that if Brutal hadn't struggled, it would have been fine so many ways... It's Brutal's
blaming
fault.
Blaming the victim. Yeah. Bertie 101.
Yeah. So Bertie tosses Brutal over the chasm between buildings and fails spectacularly. And Brutal hits the side of the building and falls up.
Well, let's be specific. You drop Brutal on Sasha.
Oh, on Sasha.
Thus taking Sasha out and yeah. potentially crippling Brutal. Then you have your finest idea, immediately charging off the roof to try and make the jump
yeah.
yourself. And landing on the ground as well
yeah.
to... allow Zolf to turn up to the mess that was his party.
And he lands on Sasha.
Yes.
Which, again, gives Sasha another set of scars.
Oh, yes, you have a, she has a Maltese
falcon
imprinted upon her back.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so, I turn up after having, because I have a peg leg, I have a movement speed of pathetic.
Yes.
And only just make it to the fight after it's over. So that man gets away.
Yep.
Heal up Bertie yep. and Brutal and Sasha. Unfortunately for Bertie, Brutal was a bit annoyed.
Yeah.
He runs off.
He runs off.
He runs off into Paris.
At which point Bertie runs off.
Because yeah. Bertie has priorities and you are not them.
Yep.
So we let Bertie go.
Yep.
And then we do some investigation in the offices of La Gazette Grande.
Yes, we did. We found some records about what Amelie Rose had been researching, but mm-hmm. basically not very much. We did find, however, the address of her mother.
And you found out that the entirety of La Gazette Grande in dribs and drabs got shut down almost artificially as everyone left for wonderful other opportunities, more or
yeah,
less.
Yeah, we found a list of people who had all had mysterious, unexpected, happy things happen to them.
So you then decided to go visit Amelie Rose.
Well, I think slightly before that, we also see Bertie off.
Ah, yes, I do forget.
We find him at the station.
Yeah, getting on a train.
and he just leaves.
A midnight train going anywhere.
Anywhere, I think, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be more specific.
And this is where we head into our little Bertie spin-off side quest. We won't go into huge amounts of detail here, as it was, as said, a side quest.
It's a lot like Frasier.
It's labelled in the feed. You'll be able to listen to them actually pretty much in isolation if you chose.
Does that mean I get to be Niles?
Yeah,
yes. Amazing. I'll be Niles.
So the side quest was a bit fun. Again, it happened without Lydia. And as we've previously established, Lydia is the best part of the podcast. She was off having real life adventures as opposed to our fake adventures.
I forget.
Anyway, that happens. And Bertie...
So while Bertie is away,
yes,
the remaining three party members went to visit Amelie Rose's mother, who basically understood everything and told us what was going on. Because we didn't.
A load of people who had anything even remotely to do with sort of archaeology and the automators had all left for amazing adventures. And even Emily Rose was away in America on a wonderful opportunity, but her mother certainly seemed under the impression that she was dead.
Yeah.
And suggested you could probably access via the archaeological dig which was happening.
So we go to Notre Dame, but really that only results in a tour and we learn about the Paladins of Apollo, who are big and loud and stupid. So yes, then we go and investigate the archaeological digs.
And use it to get into the crypts.
A bit too quickly because we are entirely unprepared. We have one torch and only I can see in the dark.
It was supposed to be a scouting mission, but we took the opportunity to get away.
So it went really well.
Hey, heading into the Parisian catacombs with no official escort, no one knowing that you're going there and no preparation, only ever ends well.
So I think the first thing is we got a bit lost.
To get lost, we would have had to know where we were going in the first place.
Correct.
Then there was a cave-in.
Correct.
Which Hamid made worse.
That was really bad. Yeah.
Made significantly worse.
I lost the use...
I rolled four ones in a row,
yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. I'm amazed none of us died. But I lost the use of my other leg. And Hamid lost the use of his right hand?
Left hand.
Left hand. So that's not good. And Sasha had to go and scout herself with her very loud, whirry, wind-up torch.
She picked up from the dig. And when she was going round, she ended up encountering an enormous pit.
Scary.
Full of filth.
Oh, a goop pit.
A goop pit. And then at the goop pit, started getting stalked by an absolutely hideous monster.
Tentacle monster.
Got no idea what it is.
It's got eyes where its teeth should be and teeth where its eyes should be.
And tentacles for the rest.
So, cutting a long story short, everyone started panicking. She ran back to us. We all tried to run away.
Which was really difficult because you couldn't walk and I only had one working arm.
And only you could see in the dark.
Yep.
You eventually managed to make your ways to a precarious bridge.
Yep.
Only to then get ambushed by the thing which was navigating easily and effectively.
It's like it was built for this environment.
It yanked Zolf immediately off the bridge.
Zolf went flying into a mysterious chasm and was never heard from again.
Yeah, my last thing was to try and throw my trident at it and I missed.
But you lost your trident again, that's the important thing.
I did lose my trident again. I think then, I now have none of my starting gear.
Correct. And then the creature also managed to grab Hamid, pull him back towards the bridge and chuck him over. And then Sasha again... What, you know, in the retelling, Sasha comes off as the only truly capable member of the group.
She is the hero.
She ends up in complete pitch darkness, because the torch falls with you, climbing down a cliff to try and find out what happened to you all, and eventually, at the point of exhaustion, ends up falling into what turned out to be an underground river at the bottom of that ravine, and also blacking out.
Yep. So then I wake up.
Yes.
In a lab.
A spooky lab.
With a metallic bit of apparatus down my throat, helping me to breathe, and ports all over my arms and legs. I say that, I don't have any legs anymore.
Yeah.
The other one got removed, again, at the knee. So yeah, so I climb out.
Yep.
And remove the thing from my throat, and I find Hamid is kind of...
Fine.
Fine, he's on a table, and he's just... Oh, he's had his arm has been... had surgery done on it, but other than that, he's pretty fine.
Mm-hmm.
Sasha, on the other hand, is laid out on a table because her organs are kind of propped up in different places, just outside of her torso.
Although she doesn't appear to be dead.
No, and she's also not conscious. So I put her back together again.
You put her back together again masterfully, and no one will ever know, but you do an excellent job.
I know, and Mr. Ceiling knows.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because...
So, yes, so suddenly we hear somebody coming.
Large metallic footsteps, ominous, scary, bigoted.
Hello!
turns out it was Bertie all along.
Yeah.
Turns out after his side quest, he'd been contacted by Wild, told we were in a bit of trouble.
Wild being a meritocratic agent and our...
On the sly.
Handler.
Much to our joy. And he contacted the Apollo and was sent down with his escort of...
Oh, I can't remember. They're just like hot meat. The four Chippendales.
But their names were like Stephen, Barry, Will.
Yep.
That's all Bertie was willing to call them.
Doesn't really matter.
One of those filthy foreign names.
You mean Stefan, Guillaume, and I forget who the last one was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then we find out that the ceiling is alive.
I'm really happy to see you.
Yeah, we have appendages and robotic voices, and Bertie calls it Mr. Ceiling, and that sticks.
Because that's how canon works. Apparently, you just get the name in first, and I just have to roll with it.
Yeah, you do.
I think that sounded like a no but to me. <that's N. laughs>
So, yeah, you ended up encountering a ceiling, which eventually then led you to an enormous cavernous vault.
It turned out to be a creepy computer constructed out of the brains of dead people.
Definitely a supercomputer, maybe even a hypercomputer, if such a thing would even exist.
And it was really happy to see Sasha. Because it had been missing Sasha a long time.
It turns out one of the brains used to belong to Sasha's friend Brock.
Yeah.
And Brock retained some sliver of individuality within the never-ending nightmare of being trapped inside this computer.
Which is why it had siphoned funds off without it knowing, because it's more of a gestalt entity.
Yep.
So this one brain had slightly rebelled and had bought the top room of the Le Triomphe.
But it was okay because that was immediately taken away.
Yeah, it was fixed.
And it revealed itself to be incredibly evil and manipulative, seeking to take over the world and murder lots of people to fuel its expansion.
More incredibly naive and accidentally evil and manipulative, because it definitely hadn't had the three laws.
Correct.
It had one instruction, because it was built by Francois Henri, head of the Ordinateurs.
Who you then went to go meet.
Turns out it had rewritten his memory so much it completely destroyed his mind.
He was a broken, hollow shell of a human being.
So Bertie killed him.
Correctly.
Yeah, I mean,
he was also the person responsible for harvesting the brains to put into the computer in the first place, and therefore deserved everything that happened to him.
Unfortunately, the one instruction he'd left the computer with was nobody should know about you and no other guiding principles, because that's how you program.
Yeah, it didn't go great. So then after that, let's see.
Well, we all try and talk ethics. I do a really good job of convincing it that maybe
you
it wants
open
to
go to that computer's minds to whole new vistas of opportunity. And
unfortunately,
potential.
I treated it as a child, not as a robot with no instructions. So try to talk
and
to
then
it.
And then we let the computer talk to Bertie and give him ideas.
Which was a terrible thought.
So we stay with it for a couple of weeks.
You stay for it a week for the simple reason that there's not really a solution to this problem, because if you leave,
it's
your memories
too
are wiped.
Powerful.
Yeah. So I pray about my legs.
Yep. And get mixed messages.
Yeah, get a mixed message. Again, thanks, Poseidon. Sasha has yet another really heartfelt and beautiful moment talking to Mr. Ceiling and the aspect of it that might be Brock.
Yep.
Hamid is finding out the best way to kill the thing.
Because Hamid has just decided this needs to
Hamid
end.
Is certain.
And Bertie cements himself as a complete monster.
All Bertie wants is his friend Brutor back.
I would say that's quite a lovable thing.
And then Brutor comes back. But, you know, then what did you decide to do to Brutor?
I changed his memory.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate gaslight.
Of all of the things that Bertie has done, everyone's objecting to, like, wiping the memory of a dog.
So anyway, and there's a brief discussion about maybe you'll get around to modifying the rest of the party's mind so that they love you more.
Yeah, maybe.
And then you will have a bright idea to do with your contract, don't you?
I should point out, by the way, that when you say you do mean Bertie
for all
these things, just to clarify
on
this.
In all fairness, James, you are actually a good person who I know and respect.
I won't go that far. And
No, I do know you.
Oh, that's very kind. Bertie seizes this opportunity to have his approach the contract as a problem and has his brain blasted full of ultimate legal knowledge. So he is now a legal genius.
Well, insofar as his own contract.
Insofar as his own contract.
And all
operates.
It happened to do was push out any knowledge you had of any finances, anything tied to you or the contract in any way, including ba-ba-ba-da.
Means Zolf's off the hook for 200 gold.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It's almost like giving it free rein to tinker in your brain had ramifications. As we previously established, there are no ramifications for any actions in this one.
I think the idea is you're aware you're in debt and you're aware of like your situation, but any specifics like,
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
So, you then Hamid gathers you all together, and Mr. Ceiling's glad of that too, because he has some news.
Yes, that he wants to kill the meritocrats and replace them with copies of himself.
Well, it seems that that's the only way, because then they don't need to know, but everyone can still get helped. But he'll need some more brains.
Zolf helped.
Yeah, Zolf helped. So basically, it's going to take over the world.
However...
So Hamid, having gathered everyone together for a denouement, announces that he knows who the murderer is.
Poirot's the head.
Oh, wait, no, different story. Hamid activates the self-destruct button, essentially.
Mm. Broadly speaking, yes. Yeah. A giant, hideous Gestalt entity tears itself out from all of the robotics and proceeds to
enter a simulation, because Alex is such a good storyteller.
Spoilers!
Yeah. So at that moment, as far as we're concerned, we have a big monster, a computer monster, which we beat up and then run away from.
There's a big explosion, very satisfying
dramatic
one.
We run around, we get out of the...
And the entirety of Paris welcomes us as heroes.
And everything is great, there's a ticker tape parade.
Although,
all
Sasha
of our principal character objectives are fulfilled.
In person running around at one point.
Yep, and
Hamid
gets a message from his parents saying, hey, we actually love you.
We're so
fine,
proud
you're
of
not
you
a
for
massive
fixing
disappointment.
This.
Oh. Bertie is absolutely heroic enough, and his contract's just done.
He saved
That's
the
it.
World. He's yep. done. He's free.
Yep. I don't know what happened to me.
Zolf got a offer for a high-level commission, his own ship, was off the hook with basically everything he's previously done. And I believe your family were also contacted, although it didn't go into too much detail.
Yeah, just something happened, don't know.
And
it was
Sasha,
all a dream.
All a dream.
Because Alex is a monster.
Yeah, it turned out you got everything you wanted. It's almost like wonderful things happened that dealt with the problem. And Hamid had a bit of a
epistolary novel. God, no, just stop them. They're terrible.
Hamid,
it's really lazy. Sorry,
Hamid had a bit of an existential crisis.
Would you if you were trapped in a simulation run by a powerful machine that you had no hope of defeating?
Correct.
Whoa.
So the...
It's almost like Hamid is going to spend the rest of his life never knowing what truth is.
Correct. So the rest of the party basically decide to go back to where the Ordinators
were. Well, I don't think Bertie does. I think we have there's one thing where Bertie's like, no, this is fine. This is great. Is great.
Everything's fine. And I'll die happy and I'm protected from the contract. So, of course, let's just keep going.
Also, I think Sasha struggles coming back as well.
Sasha actually was one of the first ones to have her suspicions because
Sasha doesn't
trust good news.
That's fair.
And basically good news automatically set off alarm bells. So, the whole party returned to the Ordinateurs to find a doorway leading to themselves.
Back into
in
the real world.
Yeah.
However, Sasha, she can't go back out without fetching Hamid, because she can't leave Hamid to his fate.
Oh, that's it. Hamid gets really depressed.
Yeah. He can't handle it.
Existential crisis.
And just goes to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just gorges himself with Oscar Wilde. He just sits there and eats.
Hang on a minute.
He sits there and eats an enormous amount of food with Oscar Wilde. And as Sasha is returning, he gets a visit from Brock in the form of the clockwork machine, but this time with a voice. And it tells him
to look after Sasha.
And he basically has no right to mope when there's stuff to be done.
And it gives me just enough of a spark of hope to escape the simulation.
So as Sasha's running back all heroically, she passes you running in the other direction. For goodness sake! You both run back in, head back into the Ordinateurs, and we find you back at the moment when...
I activate the self-destruct button.
And everything just kind of turns
Stops.
Off.
Stops, yeah, it wasn't very dramatic.
Deja vu.
It's all right, there's an explosion soon.
Well, there's not really any... No big boom, nothing. There's a bit of a hiss.
Yep.
We're all just broken and...
But wait, there were some...
Traumatised.
There were some massive elementals.
Yes, because as you head down even deeper than the vault, you find out the alternate power source, which is four huge elementals.
Oh, yeah.
Who have been contained and constrained.
Basically, there was some sort of puzzle, which we completely ignored.
It was like, God, we could probably engage with this and therefore dodge any kind of ramification. Ah, push the buttons.
Yeah, so was it Hamid who released the fire elemental?
I forget. The fire elemental was weirdly fascinated by Hamid.
Yeah.
Indeed. And then you basically, again relying on Sasha, still with no legs, bless him.
I'm in a wheelchair at this point.
Yeah, you're in really bad state. Basically get Sasha to push all the buttons and you all just flee and let them just duke it out for a while against one another.
Have
and then
a big
go,
elemental Barney.
And then you go back down to find it pretty much dealt with and a door... that Bertie had missed when they were searching the initial room, because Bertie doesn't do so much of the
looking,
examining, anything apart from exploiting.
Mm.
And managed to find the study of Francois Henri hidden away.
Where he built the city, or came up with the plans for Mr. Ceiling.
Indeed. And you find definite links to the simulacrum.
Yep.
And also, something that kind of went unnoticed, but I'm going to bring up again? Sasha just stashed some tech while she was there. She just grabbed and stashed that stuff.
Bertie got the legs.
Yep.
Yep.
And then basically...
Fancy expensive legs.
Bertie fetches some robotic legs that Mr. Sealing had fashioned, and a robotic arm. But there's a moment between Hamid and Zolf where you unilaterally decide that all of this information, which you have been tasked to retrieve, is best destroyed.
Yep.
We do not want another Mr. Sealing.
Basically that.
And you do so.
Yep.
So,
burn the
evidence. Sealing turned off, you return to daylight, or at least you return to the upper levels to find an enormous number of staff who have had their memories rewritten again and again to forget, amongst other things, shambling corpse people who've been doing some admin, and a giant robot, and all these other things, are having a bit of a freak out.
Yeah, as is the rest of the city of the world, actually.
Because it turns out you've turned off basically everything.
It's the computer that runs the economy.
Yeah, and you turned it off. So you head out into an eerily quiet Paris where only the whimpers of those who have remembered things which they had probably rather have never remembered at all. You return to La Triomphe. Thankfully, though, you know, good news, okay? World is doomed to potential poverty and mass famine and all kinds of problems. They don't know that you lost the Triomphe, though. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
Humans and meritocrats are much more resilient than you're giving them credit for. We'll be fine without the evil computer.
Yeah, sure. That's what they all say.
Long story short, we go to the police station. Lots of people are trying to get in and wonder what the heck's going on.
Yep.
And we demand to be seen. I think Hamid gets his claws out and actually asserts some authority. And
yeah, he does.
Completely climbs up.
He doesn't get his claws out, though. No. That would be less than
a metaphorical sense.
And yes, we managed to find Wild and debrief him.
Yes.
And tell him
Woof.
Basically everything, including the fact... Yes. including the fact that we discovered that Bolag Smok...
One of the meritocrats in charge of...
Magic.
Basically, Prague and humans' interaction with magic
is dead
and has been for a while.
Things and stuff. So yeah, we handed our report. Tell him everything that we've just told you. Basically,
and that's pretty much where we end up.
Well, the final thing to mention from season one is that we did indeed confirm that Francois Henry had helped us design the simulacrum, and thanks to some judicious questioning, Mr. Sealing, we found out who the designer of the simulacrum was.
Mm.
We found out it was Nikola Tesla.
A man in such disgrace that he was effectively exiled
to America.
So something to examine.
Can there be a more severe punishment?
Well, it's basically a wasteland, isn't it?
Well,
your word's not mine.
At this point, of course, in the world building, America is still being attempted to be settled by humans, much to the annoyance of the native populations, and the humans there are having a rough time of it.
It's but not much of a country right now.
Not it's really. It's a struggling
set of settlements.
Well, it is a country. It's not much of a colony.
It's less original 13 states and more just in a state.
But more importantly, eventually Hamid, as Brutal refuses to even be near Bertie without attacking him, Hamid eventually gifts him to Madeline, the woman he went on a date with, who sadly things didn't click. And was doing a good job of actually trying to deal with
all
of these broke-down ordinatists. So as it stands, the world economy's off. Bertie's lost his dog.
The whole party are in a bit of a complete
Zolf
emotional wreck.
Zolf has literally no legs.
Yeah.
And Hamid genuinely is still not really over the fact that he doesn't know if he's in the real world
or not. And Brutal's going to live on a farm somewhere, so it's all fine for him.
He's gone next door.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's your downbeat ending for season one. Of course, though, lots of plot hooks and lots of reasons to be returning for season two, obviously. And we will see you then with Lydia, who will be back from her wild successes.
Bye!
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by RustyQuill.com and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial International License. Today's episode was recorded and produced by Alexander J. Newell. To comment on episodes, make donations, and view links, images, videos, and show notes, visit RustyQuill.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at TheRustyQuill or email us at mail@RustyQuill.com. Thanks for listening.
Indefinitely and unfairly for taking the train, it gets much easier.
So we should
sound like Southern Rail.
We should probably do each section.
Maybe that's what that is. Like, the entire commuting population of Brighton is an NPC that's split off from the party, and Southern Rail is what's been sent by the GM. And by the GM, in this case, I do mean God, I suppose.
This all got very big picture, James.
Yeah.
Makes you think.
Doesn't it, though?
Hashtag
doesn't
deep.
Yeah. Hashtag shower thoughts.
So he reacts very poorly to having his memory wiped, which shows a remarkable degree of self-knowledge for a dog.
Well, you have an astonishingly high-handed animal and set yourself a task of teaching him to be people.
Oh, you civilised him. He only eats at the table and wears clothes and things.
So he's perfectly natural. I mean,
he's actually a very intelligent dog.
He's just
never been given the chance to shine by a world that wants to grind him down. That's why we need comprehensive education for dogs.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.